welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. And brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time.
Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and my guest on this week's program is Rosalind Thornton. Born in Victoria in 1934, Rosalind moved to West Australia at an early age when her father, an army officer, was posted there. Her school years were a mixture of joy and frustration, and with enrolling at 14 different schools, life wasn't easy. In this part one of a two-part show, Rosalind tells of what life was like when her father, decorated with a DSO, was killed in action and the pressure that put on the family. Despite these setbacks, Rosalind carved out a career in the West Australian Government Printing Office, working on retouching negatives and prints, a job she loved. However, fate dealt her and her husband a cruel hand when, as a result of working with asbestos, he contracted mesothelioma and died. But to tell the story, here's Rosalind.
I'd like to start by asking you when you were born and where you were born.
Well, I was born in Ivanhoe, Victoria, 1934. My father was an officer in the army.
Right.
It was his profession.
Yes.
And my mother had been a dental nurse originally, and I was the third child.
Was Dad born in Australia?
Yes, he was born in Ballarat.
Right, so your family have been in Australia and their family have been in Australia for some time.
That's right, yes.
Okay. Mm. What's the earliest recollections or memories you have as a child?
I remember always, I vaguely remember the house in Ivanhoe. I remember there was a cement plinth in the front, and I remember trying to climb up this plinth. And I remember actually being in nappies.
Oh, goodness.
And the nappies falling down all the time and trying to climb up and trying to pull the nappy up.
So that's very early.
Yes, that must have been pretty early. I must have been about three, I suppose, at that stage.
Mm-hmm. Are your memories of childhood good ones, happy ones?
We had to move to WA, and I think that was a bit traumatic for my mother. I think she was very, very, pretty close to her mother.
Oh, okay.
And I think that sort of got her down a bit, having to move over there. My father was posted there.
Right.
And, yes, I think that was a bit unhappy for her, having to go and live over there. But strangely enough, in the end, she came to love WA. She really loved it.
Oh, it's a lovely state.
Yes. Yes, I think that was a bit traumatic.
Did it affect you? Do you have any memories of the actual move?
No, I don't think. I vaguely remember something about a big ship, getting on the ship, because we all travelled by sea in those days.
Of course.
Backwards, you know, over to WA. The train journey was pretty horrific. Mm. We did do one trip back to Melbourne on the train. It was pretty awful. You know, I remember getting on the ship, and that's about as far as I remember. And we lived for a while in rooms in Perth. I don't remember that part of it, but I remember living in the first house we lived in, South Perth. And my father used to like me to walk with him to the gate every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a windmill out the back, and he used to climb up the windmill and do things to this windmill. I don't know what they did. I can't remember what it was. But he used to insist on that. He walked me. It was quite a big block we were in. And it was in Melville Parade in South Perth, which overlooked... That was the part of the Swan River that faces towards the WA University.
Is that somewhere near the big park?
Yes, it's near Mill Point.
That's right.
And Mill Point faces into Kings Park.
In Kings Park, that's it, yes.
So that was up towards that end, towards Mill Point, this particular house.
So your early school years would have been in WA then?
Oh, yes. My first school was St Anne's College. We moved around a bit and I went to different schools, but I always remember St Anne's. I think it was my happiest school.
I can see that. You've got a wonderful smile on your face as you were talking about it.
It was a small private school run by a lady called Miss Hargraves. And my sister and my brother were there for a while. And my brother was put in Scotch College in WA. But no, it was a really good school because being small, we had a lot better tuition than, say, a lot of the children get today. And you know, the, because you know, we all seemed to start about the same time. All the girls at the school were, you know, sort of went right through to leaving standard with me.
So, you actually had them as friends, most of them, did you?
Well, one of them, one or two of them became close friends, yes. There was a girl called Margaret Harden. Margaret suffered from cerebral palsy, but she had the most wonderful brain, a very, very clever girl, and she used to even play the piano. Yes, it was a good school, but of course, at one stage, after my father was firstly wounded, we moved to Como, which was the other end of South Perth, and my mother rented a house there, and we were waiting for him to be invalided at home, but of course he died.
Now, can I just ask you about that? Mm. This must have been somewhere at the beginning of the Second World War then, or during the Second World War then.
Yes, that's right.
Where was he posted?
He was posted to the Middle East.
Right.
And he was involved in the Battle of Tobruk. And
nasty fight.
Yes, yeah. He was subsequently decorated. He won the DSO and was mentioned in dispatches three times.
So his death was as a result of that wounding?
Yes, he actually was leading his battalion through the through a minefield, and his vehicle went over a mine, and he was badly wounded.
How
lost his arm.
Right.
And he was in hospital at Alcantara. He was actually shipped from Tobruk to Alcantara, to the military hospital there, and he died. He was actually seen to be getting better, apparently, at one stage, but... and actually the doctor who attended him spoke to my mother after the war and said if they'd had antibiotics...
Simple as that.
He would have been cured, you know. And would have, you know,
that must have been very traumatic for her.
Oh, it was terrible.
I mean, apart from, you know, losing a husband is bad enough, but losing a husband and having a young family as
Yes, it was very hard for her, and we were very difficult children too. Very difficult. And, yeah, it was. It was awful.
So was she working then?
No, she wasn't working. She was just looking after us. And it was later in the war she did was working. Oh, that's right. When my sister was 16, because they're both a bit older than I am, my sister went nursing. Mm-hmm. And I think she was nursing for a while, and then she went into the Land Army. That's right. And my brother was still at Scotch at that stage.
Mm. So your brother and sister were old enough that there was that too big a gap for you to actually be mates as such and play together.
That's right, yes. Right. There was a big gap. I think actually what happened was that my mother actually miscarried twins in between myself and...
Right.
Yeah, so I mightn't have been born if they'd been born, I suppose.
Well, I mean, yes.
We don't know that one.
No, that's right.
No. Mm.
Did it have an effect on you when Dad died?
Well, it did as much that my mother was very depressed for a long time.
Of course.
Suffered an awful lot of depression. So that...
And how old would you have been at that stage, roughly?
Well, I was 5 when he went away, and I was 7, I think, when he...
that's a big thing for a little girl to carry, isn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and then after that, when my mother decided to obtain work again, she... I was put in a boarding school for a while, and that was the most dramatic thing.
Right, I was going to ask you about that when soon as you said that. Quite a different situation to the schooling you'd been used to.
Yes, that's right. It was a school on the wheat belt in WA, which was quite a long way away, which meant I was only home during school holidays. And just during school holidays. That was pretty traumatic. It wasn't a very good school. It had been recommended to my mother by friends. But it wasn't. It was a convent, very, very strict.
They all seemed to be like that.
Oh, very, very hard. Hard they were. Mm.
Yeah, obviously not left you with pleasant memories that point.
No, it wasn't at all. I don't think for quite a few of us.
No.
At school,
How old would you have been when you actually managed to? I was going to say get away from there, but probably hadn't left.
What about 3 years? I was there.
You're there for 3 years.
Yeah. It was like being in an institution.
I can imagine it would
really
have been.
It really was, yeah. Not good at all. So, I came back for my sister, came home permanently after my sister was married. And she married very young. She was only 17.
Oh, gosh, she's only a little girl, really, wasn't she, 17?
Oh, she was much older in her head, I think, at that stage. Very, you know, anyway, You see, and she married a soldier from Victoria,
mm-hmm.
and they came back. She eventually came back here, and it was one of our many trips back to Victoria by ship to see her when her first child was born.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm, so we came over by ship again on the Dominion Monarch, which was packed with war wives, being, you know, British wives and wives of New Zealand soldiers.
Was that a bit of an adventure for I assume you were about 10 years of age then, 10, 12 years of age?
I was 12 at the 12? Stage, yes.
Yeah, was that a bit of an adventure for you?
The travelling on the ship, yes, I think it was actually. We did it a few times. I mean, I remember coming over to see my grandmother a couple of times. And, yes, that was, I suppose it was more of an adventure then because it was like a troop ship.
Mm.
It was absolutely packed with women and babies. And,
goodness.
And the cabin we were in was, I think it was about 12 women.
Gosh.
Two babies.
Wow.
One girl around about the same age as me. I was trying to explain to her how big Australia was, and she said, oh, no, London's much bigger than Australia because we've got big parks and... Yes, it was strange. I said, isn't it strange they don't know anything about our country and they're coming here to live?
Mm. Isn't it indeed?
Mm.
So did you were coming backwards and forwards between WA and Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you actually live in WA for?
Well, I actually left permanently in 1981.
Right, so you were there for most of your growing up life.
Most of my life, but I came back after the last trip, which was in 1940-something. I think the next time I came over was in 1970. I came over on a holiday just to renew my my roots, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. we'll eventually get to 1970, but I think there's a few stories before we get to there.
Okay, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay, a young girl growing up into a young woman in WA in the, what that would have been about 1950, would have been
16, 17 50,
years,
yes,
just sort of finding your own way then.
Mm.
Were you still at school then?
Yes, I did. I think I left school in 1950, I think. Mm.
Okay, what year did you get to?
Actually, because of all our travelling around and all the changes, because actually I worked it out once, I think I changed school 14 times.
Good Lord.
Which is a lot, isn't it?
Oh, that is a lot. It's...
So I was a bit behind in some areas at school, so I think I would have been about 15. Actually, I didn't do leaving. I did some subjects leaving and I did some subjects... That's right, I did some leaving subjects. I was ahead in some and behind in others, very, very much behind in maths. Could never really catch up in that.
No, it's one of those subjects, isn't it? If you're not showing the basics right from the beginning, it's just it's a mystery.
No, just never had confidence at all.
So were you pleased to leave school or not?
To a certain degree I was. I was sort of getting a bit of a hammering from one of the teachers.
Oh.
At one stage. It was funny, really. I think she had two girls at school too, and I think she... I was inclined to be a bit of an organiser. You know, I was always organising concerts, and I was very involved in Save the Children Fund.
Oh, well, a good thing to have been involved
with the Junior Red Cross. So
right.
I liked raising money for that particular charity.
Right.
And I think she felt I was pushing myself forward too much. I got on her nerves, you know.
Good Lord.
Because she had these two other girls who sort of were very quiet and sat in the background. And she gave me a few lectures about that, you know, you're too pushy. And
well, hasn't time proven who was right? I mean, these days the encouragement is to get out there and be open, isn't it?
Yes,
and do it.
No. Yeah. Even the headmistress said, oh, you know, you're upsetting Mrs. Clifton.
Oh.
Shouldn't say her name, Mrs. Zink.
Mrs.
X,
yes.
Yes, she's very upset, you know, pushing yourself forward too much.
Good Lord. Did that worry you or concern you, or were you just more determined to...
I think it did worry me a bit. Yeah, I mean,
because these are adults, aren't they, telling you?
I was supposed to be doing music with her, and most of the time she was lecturing me.
Oh, fabulous.
You know, during the music lesson, so I didn't do very well.
No. And did you enjoy music?
Yeah, so that was my biggest love, actually.
It was your passion.
Very much involved in that. Mm-hmm.
Gee, did she ruin that for you, or did that passion stay?
No, she didn't ruin it for me.
It was too strong.
Yes.
Listen to older voices, living history, on Ageless Radio.
Well, when I left school, and I started doing commercial art at Perth Technical College, and I did that for 2 years, and I wasn't very good at it actually. I can't really understand why, because I always loved drawing. But anyway, I managed to get a job after that at the government printing office.
Was that your first job, real
job? My first job, yeah.
And what did that
involve? I was in the lithographic department, and I was actually retouching all the negatives that came through, the big ones, big maps.
Oh, okay.
I did some drawing as well in the litho drafting room, and sometimes I worked up in the photo section, which was quite interesting too.
I was going to say, it looked like, from the way you were looking, yeah, there, it was really interesting work for you.
It was interesting work. It was a very old building,
right,
full of rats. But, of course, in those days, people went to work. They were there all their lives in those sort of jobs, government jobs.
Yes, of course they were.
Which has changed.
Oh, yes. Yes, I think the pendulum's swung too far from one end to the other now, isn't it? I mean, nobody has job security anymore.
No, none at all.
Mm.
So the... And then we sort of had a mini depression in 52, and everybody who was the last people who had been put on the job or recruited
first
were the first to go, so I was one of them.
How sad for you. Were you still living with Mum then?
Yes, at that stage, yes.
And was Mum sort of depending upon that income, or was that just a bit of cream?
Oh, no, she managed very well. She always did a little bit. She used to work here and there. And, we never owned our own home, but we always had a lovely, comfortable home.
Right.
You know, and, she was very, very, very well fed.
Yes.
Good. But she was very lonely, I think. Extremely lonely.
Yes. Mm. She never met somebody else after Dad died?
Oh, she did eventually remarry.
Right. Mm. Oh, that's good.
But it was a bit of a disaster.
Oh, that's bad. Oh, dear, here goes this pendulum.
Yes,
again.
It wasn't a very
good thing. Oh, dear, because it sounded like she deserved something better than that
she
then.
Yeah, she did, really. Yeah. Mm.
So what happened to you after the lithographic job finished?
I actually applied, because of my experience at the government printing office, I actually applied for work at the Lands and Surveys. And I was told I had a very good chance of getting in there. But it took a while to be accepted into that job for various reasons. So in the meantime, I took a job in the tobacconists, which was quite interesting too.
What was interesting about that?
Well, it was interesting because it was in London Court. I don't know whether you know Perth at all, do you?
I do know Perth. I know modern Perth more than Perth of 1950, though.
Well, London Court hasn't changed much. It was sort of...
Is that one of those courts that goes off the main thoroughfare?
It goes through from St George's Terrace right through
right.
Hay Street.
Yes, I'm sure I've walked through there many times.
It's old.
Yes,
it's got
I do
old
know
English
what you mean.
Feel to it.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So it was quite a nice place to work. Anyway, I was only there for a few months, and I finally got into the Lands and Surveys Department and actually trained as a draftsman there.
Was that unusual in those days, or were there a lot of women
That's
doing that?
That's the way women... A lot of women... See, women didn't... need qualifications to get in there. You just, if you had had certain abilities like drawing, that was a big thing. So you just go there with your folio, and the fact that I was a ward of legacy too was a help. Actually, help was the main thing that got me in there, I think, because
right.
they still felt in those days they should help families of the fallen soldiers. So I eventually got in there, and I was actually trained as a draftsperson on the job, which was amazing. And I worked in deeds drafting, which was probably more interesting than the main area.
Well, what did that involve, for those of us who have no knowledge of this area?
When anyone bought land, they required a title deed,
mm-hmm.
and we actually drew the map of the blocks of or the lots. The property, there might be rivers running through it, and we put all the necessary...
Did that information come to you, or did you have to go out to the place itself?
No, you'd have to do what we call a search. I don't think they have to do that now, but we used to have to go into the archives and look for all the... and put all the necessary document numbers and things like that on the title deed. So that was... it was quite an interesting job. I quite enjoyed being there.
Hmm.
Had quite a nice social life, you know, and so I was there for a few years until I married.
Okay, before we get to marriage, you mentioned the social life. What did young women of 17, 18 do in the early 50s? I mean, what was your main social life?
Well, it was mainly with the music. I belonged to a concert party called the Legionnaires, and we toured country areas.
Wonderful.
What we do is hire a bus and travel up to various places, and we weren't always paid. Most of the time we would the money would go to charities. We'd just get our expenses paid, and the people in the country where we were performing used to put us up.
Oh, great.
It was really quite lovely, actually. We'd be put up in private homes.
Right.
And they'd put on quite nice food for us, you know, beautiful food, you know, and a lovely spread, and looked after us very well. And then we'd finished our performances, we'd hop on the bus, or sometimes we'd stay the night if it was very far away. Then we'd hop on the bus and come back to Perth.
Now, listen, for anybody who's listening to this, they would never forgive me if I didn't ask you, what was the instrument or instruments that you played?
I was a singer.
A singer? When did you discover you had a singing voice?
Oh, when I was at boarding school, I think. We had to it was a convent, and we had to actually sing the Mass now and again. We were still doing a Gregorian chant.
Okay. And they're very beautiful, too.
Yes.
And was it pointed out to you, or did you recognise that you had that quality?
I think I knew I had a good voice.
Right.
I think I knew.
So coming back to the band, what was the style of music you played?
Oh, well...
Or sang?
Light sort of things, musical comedy.
Right.
Some comedy things. I did a bit of dancing, too, with the group. And there were a few dancers, actually. The leader of the concert party, the one who organised the whole thing, was Bert Shaw. Now, he eventually came over to Melbourne, was actually working for one of the television stations as a choreographer.
Okay.
And there was another well-known person actually working in the same group, and that was Reg Priestman. Reg Priestman finally went to Paris with the Marquis de Sauvage Ballet Company. So there were quite a few.
You were amongst some noteworthy people.
So Reg eventually settled in Tasmania. Huh. I saw him a few years ago. And he was running a restaurant in Hobart. But in the meantime, he also organised all the entertainment for the Rest Point Casino.
Okay.
One of the wonderful things that Reg did was when he became quite well known, he used to every year come back to Australia, select a couple of dancers, and take them back to Europe.
Oh, how wonderful for them.
Wasn't that a wonderful thing to
do? Oh, yes. Indeed.
Yes.
Did you ever have the desire or the thought about being professional with your singing?
Oh, yes. I was, I was studying with Mervyn Pieper. Mervyn Pieper trained quite a few singers who did, you know, went into professional singing. Mm-hmm. I would have, probably if I hadn't married, I think I would have, you know, taken it on.
Well, okay, let's get to that point. Graham, how did you meet Graham?
Graham's my second husband.
Oh, okay.
I was married before Graham.
How did you meet your first husband first?
Through friends. One of the girls I worked with at the Lands and Surveys Department actually worked with me at the Government Printing Office, and she was Czech. And her name was Zdenka Brich. And through her, my first husband was Czech.
Oh,
okay. And through her I met him. She was Czech too. So, so that's how we met originally.
And what was your first husband's employment?
He'd been a druggist or chemist in Czechoslovakia, and he was working sort of as an industrial chemist. And when I first met him, wasn't getting very well paid. But he eventually went to work when the refinery was built in WA. He actually went to work as an industrial chemist there. But unfortunately for him, he worked on the construction as well. I think what they used to call it, lagging, wrapping all the pipes with
Oh, it's like the insulation material.
Yeah,
asbestos. Oh, and don't tell me he got asbestosis.
He did, yes.
Oh, eventually.
Oh, separated long before that.
Yeah, but even so, that's not
dreadful
nice.
Dreadful thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And he used to, you know, I remember meeting him one day and he was just covered in the stuff. You know, just absolutely all over him, you know, in his hair. And
nobody thought anything about it then, did they?
No. And he never ever got compensation.
Of course
either.
Not.
No.
No, of course
not. It was Kellogg's, was the company that actually built the refinery, yeah.
Mm.
He did try to get it, but he never got it.
No, no.
Pretty grim, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Some grim things.
And I mean, it's even brought home more so today when we see that... It's
James Hardy business
and people who had worked in the industry for so many years whose lives have been cut short because of it.
That's right. And not only that, but quite often families... You know, like wives often wash the clothes.
That's right, of course.
Well, I used to do that from now and again too.
Yes.
Know? So.
And you can't help but occasionally think about it, can you?
No,
it's,
you can't.
It's impossible
no.
not
when
to.
Well, you hear it in the news.
That's right.
Thinking,
and you try and put it behind you, but there's always that lagging doubt.
Yes,
there's
always that
And you must, you know, you wonder how many hundreds of thousands of other wives are like that.
That's
and, of course,
right.
And then you've got young children in the house and bring the clothes in the house.
Mm, that's right.
And you don't know whether they've picked it up either.
You don't.
They are nasty.
Tune in next week for the continuation of Rosalind's story, where she tells us how she lost her job because of government policy towards women who marry. She also introduces us to her life in the theatre, where she worked on shows such as Evita and for the Australian Ballet Company. There's a lot more to Rosalind's story, so join us again at the same time next week. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.